नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, 7th chapter, text number 11.
Ta uparata vishaya bilasha upabruto pashama param nirviti mavapa tasmin.
In that ashram, translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki. In the gardens of Pulaha Ashrama, Maharaj Bharat lived alone and collected a variety of flowers, twigs and tulasi leaves. He also collected the water of the Gandaki river as well as various roots, fruits and bulbs. With these, he offered food to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. And worshipping him, he remained satisfied. In this way, his heart was completely uncontaminated and he did not have the least desire for material enjoyment. All material desires vanished. In this steady position, he felt full satisfaction and was situated in devotional service. Purport. Everyone is searching after peace of mind. This is obtainable only when one is completely freed from the desire for material sense gratification and is engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam Yome Bhaktya Prayachati. Worship of the Lord is not at all expensive. One can offer the Lord a leaf, a flower, a little fruit and some water. The Supreme Lord accepts these offerings when they are offered with love and devotion. In this way, one can become freed from material desires. As long as one maintains material desires, he cannot be happy. As soon as one engages in the devotional service of the Lord, his mind is purified of all material desires. Then one becomes fully satisfied. Savai pumsam paro dharmo yato bhakti radokshaje ahaitukya pratihata yayatma supracitati vasudeve bhagavati bhakti yoga prayojitaha janayatyashu vairagyam jnanam chayadate ahaitukam. The supreme occupation dharma for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service and to the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. By rendering devotional service unto the Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. These are the instructions given in Srimad Bhagavatam, the supreme Vedic literature. One may not be able to go to Pulahashrama, but wherever one is, one can happily render devotional service to the Lord by adopting the processes mentioned above. Om Agyan. In the gardens of Pulahashrama, Maharaj Bharat lived alone and collected a variety of flowers, twigs and tulasi leaves. He also collected the water of the Gandaki river, as well as various roots, fruits and bulbs. With these he offered food to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev, and worshipping him, he remained satisfied. In this way, his heart was completely uncontaminated and he did not have the least desire for material enjoyment. All material desires vanished. In this steady position, he felt full satisfaction and was situated in devotional service. We are reading from the chapter, The Activities of King Bharata. So this is the first chapter in the Bharata section, where King Bharata, having completed his kingly duties, is going to the forest to renounce all his comforts and luxuries and focus his attention on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vasudev. As it is mentioned here, the material desires almost vanished for Bharat Maharaj. In this way, he became almost free from contamination. One attains this stage of complete freedom from material desires in a very, very developed stage. Although one may apparently become free from material desires, freedom from material desires altogether is a very advanced stage. When one's devotional service is fully developed. Krishna Chakravarti Thakur explains in the Madhuri Kadambini that there are many stages after which only all the desires get completely vanquished. Like he gives an example how when you say Gramo Dagda, the village is burnt, or Fato Bhagna, the cloth is torn, it doesn't mean the village is finished or the cloth is finished. Even after the cloth is torn, still the torn cloth will be there still. Similarly, even when the village is burnt, still some portions of the village are not yet burnt, partially burnt. In the same way, the Anartha Nivritti also begins at Anartha Nivritti stage, then Nishtha, Ruchi, Rati. Even after the Rati stage, still there may be some residual impurities in the heart of a person. It's still possible. That's why he says, the Anartha Nivritti takes place in various stages. Ekadesha Vartani means one small portion of Anartha is removed. Bahudesha Vartani means little more. Prayiki means even more complete. Atyantiki means almost complete. Finally, Purna, when you say it's totally finished, that Anartha is finished. Also explains about different Anarthas, like there is a aparadotta. How from aparadas there are many sufferings, many desires are coming from that. Aparadotta, from pap karma, from punya, sukrutotta, dushkrutotta, aparadotta. Many different types of anarthas are there. So many types of anarthas. Even from bhakti practice, aparad can come. He says bhaktiyutta. Bhaktiyutta means while performing bhakti, we get so many material facilities to enjoy, which in turn kindle our material desires. By Taranga Rangini, he says, when we get facilities in material life, then that may again infatuate us. So these anarthas, they of course start getting eradicated from the Anartha Nivritti stage. But then different anarthas take longer time, little by little. That is why in the second chapter, Lord Krishna concludes the second chapter saying in Bhagavad Gita, Yesha Brahmi Stiti Partha Nainam Prapya Vimukshati. This is the situation of a person situated in that platform of Brahman, Supreme Brahman. Yesha Brahmi Stiti Partha Nainam Prapya Vimukshati. He will again not fall prey into illusion. But then one verse before that he says, Vihaya Kaman Yas Sarvan Pumam Sharati Nispraha. Vihaya means having completely given up. Kaman. So this completely giving up, what it means is he has given up material desires but is convinced that there is no pleasures to be attained from the sense objects of this world. He will never turn back. He is totally convinced. Vihaya Kaman Yas Sarvan Pumam Sharati Nispraha. So he walks, he wanders nispraha, without any desires. Nirmamo, nirahankara. Without sense of proprietorship, without false ego, the false ahankar. Such a person. He is actually tasya prajna patishtita. He is a man of fixed intelligence. So when we say vihaya kaman, having given up desires, it's very easy to give up the desires, but not altogether, totally. Because even after having given up the desires, again there is a tendency to brood over the objects of this world. The word charati is used in the Shastra often for the material desires. Just as a cow is grazing in the pastures, similarly our mind also has a tendency to graze over the objects of this world. One keeps grazing over. Even although one may externally give up the objects of the senses. That is why before telling that one verse, Vihaya Kama and Yasarvan, there is a very long discussion that goes on between Krishna and Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita about the question about the Sthita Prajna. So, who is the Sthita Prajna? Arjuna asked this question. A self-realized soul. A person who has achieved perfection. What are his symptoms? So he asks Krishna various questions which are very relevant to the point of discussion here. As he explains here, Prabhupada says here in the beginning, everyone is searching after peace of mind. This is obtainable only when one is completely freed from the desire for material sense gratification and is engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. So this peace of mind is also explained. How one gets this peace of mind? When one's buddhi is engaged in the Lord's service. Nasti buddhira yuktasya. This is the opposite way of saying it. Nasti buddhira ayuktasya. Nacha yuktasya bhavana. Nacha bhaveta shanti rashantasya kutaha sukham. So there he talks a similar thing about how if one is not engaged in the Lord's service, ayuktasya, then there is no bhav. When there is no bhav, then there is no asa bhaveta shantir, then there is no peace. When there is no peace, how can there be sukham? How can there be happiness, he is asking. So in his conversation, when Arjuna asked this question about sthita prajna, he asked three very important questions. How a person, a sadhaka or a practitioner of spiritual life, how is he situated? How does he not engage his senses? Or if he is not engaging his senses, how does he feel so when he is not engaging his senses? When he is restraining his mind and senses, how does he feel? What does he experience? So this is a very relevant question. Because, first of all, the living entities in this world, everyone is very actively engaging their material senses and sense objects in this world. You can see that. Why one does that? It's very simple. Because the soul, the very first thing the soul comes in contact with is the false ego. And once he comes in contact with the false ego, his intelligence becomes polluted. And with the polluted intelligence, gradually the mind and senses also become polluted. He acquires the, actually man, buddhi, he gets the senses, he gets the man, all these things after he gets the ahankar only. From rajasic ahankar, tamasic ahankar, sattvic ahankar, different things come. The senses come and the man comes from the sattvic ahankar. So now he has got them, but they are polluted also. Polluted means he always thinks, I am this body. This is the first contamination. So the soul who is a servant of Krishna, now he thinks, I am the enjoyer. I am the proprietor. I am the controller. And this whole world of sense objects is meant for my enjoyment. So this is a misfortune of the soul when it comes to this world. So when he thinks like that, everything begins with wrong identification, wrong type of thinking. And then he endeavors very hard in this world, chasing after the mirage of the sense objects of this world. That is why the mind is the greatest devil or the enemy of the soul. Of course, the mind is also called as a friend. Not before one comes to Krishna consciousness. When one is not fortunate enough to acquire the association of a devotee, then one may observe that the mind becomes a devil. Mind actually is a source of all the material desires. Sankalpa prabhavan, kaman, tyaktvan, sarvan, asheshatah. Krishna says that in the sixth chapter, he explains about the mind. He says, sankalpa prabhavan, kaman. Sankalpa prabhavan. Prabhavan means originate. It is originating. There are so many plans and thoughts and desires and so many types of things, like a parade, like a march parade, coming from our heart, one after another, continuously. When we sit to chant Hare Krishna, we can see that so many plans and thoughts and desires and unfulfilled desires and worries and longings, hankerings, everything comes out. One after another, they keep coming, coming, coming. So the mind is actually the reservoir from where all these things are originating, from the subconscious mind. All these things are originating like that. So the mind keeps all these desires and keeps on giving them shape, one after another. And it may take many, many lifetimes for one to fulfill all those material desires which are arising from the mind. And connected to the mind are the five senses, like the eyes, eyes, nose, tongue, skin, and ears. So they are connected. And already the mind, subconscious mind, has so many previous experiences. And now again, when the senses are contemplating on the sense object, so the mind makes a one-to-one comparison. There is a previous experience, and now again one is coming in contact with the sense object in order to fulfill the desire. So again, one gets back into the whirlpool or cycle of performing the same old activities. That's why Prahlad Maharaj says, punaha punaha charvita charvanana. Repeatedly enjoying the same thing. When we talk of enjoying, there are many things in this world to be enjoyed. Somebody may be attached to wealth. Somebody may be attached to possessions. Somebody may be attached to opposite sex. Someone may be attached to name and fame. So there are many, many things, or gold and silver. So Srimad Bhagavatam very vividly explains these things in different sections. Like the Gandharvapur. Sometimes you look at the sky, the clouds look like some marble palace. Similarly, somebody is attached to a very beautiful bungalow, having a bungalow. Or somebody is attached to having a beautiful car. So, every living entity, according to the desires in the mind, he keeps dreaming about some sense object. Constantly it's going on in the mind. And it may take years or probably lifetimes for one to give up unwanted desires. Like a man was constantly dreaming about purchasing a beautiful car. So he would keep the photo of the car on his table, in his office notice board, keep watching the car. Someday I have to get this car. So practically for 20 years he accumulated wealth. And at last he could buy that car for 10 lakhs. He put some 10 lakhs and got the new car. So when he was coming down once from the Himalayan mountain range, when he was coming from the downward road, at one time he found that the car steering, actually he lost control. He was trying to turn it right, but it was going straight. He couldn't turn it right or left. And then he thought, now I have to save my life. It was going, gliding down the mountain. It was going to topple. So he opened the door and he jumped off. Somehow he barely could save himself. He got onto a tree and the car toppled down at it. He saw it going down. And then subsequently 3-4 vehicles fell one over another. Later on he was admitted in the hospital. So after a week when he came out of the hospital, he saw his jammed car. So the very same car which he dreamt to buy, which he bought, which he drove and he enjoyed, now he doesn't even want to look at it. It is like a nightmare for him. When he looked at the car, which is totally jammed, he thought, my Lord, I am saved. Now I don't want to buy any more cars. In the same manner, the living entity also dreams of varieties of sense objects to enjoy. He wants to experience enjoyment. And somehow or other, he may or may not attain those sense objects by his destiny. Then he works very hard. This is craving. That is why, initially in our heart, there is a vritti. Vritti is actually like a ripple. You throw a stone in the pond, in a very silent water, calm water, you throw a stone, there is a ripple that forms around the stone. But then sometimes you throw a bigger stone, it causes bigger ripples. And in this way, the vritti turns into vasana, and that vasana turns into sanskar. And when one indulges in bad sanskar again and again, that turns into trishna. Trishna is actually a hankering, which is the most dangerous. That is why when one has the trishna in the heart, trishna is in the mode of passion. So one runs after the objects of this world. One chases them, chases after the mirage of this world. So what begins as a small vritti, a thought, gradually becomes a habit and it becomes deep-rooted like that. And then in this way, one thinks that I can enjoy and one tries hard in this world. Wanders, wanders, wanders in this world in various ways. Like this man learnt a lesson. One may later on come to a stage where when one gets the sense objects, one may understand that the sense objects cannot give me happiness. One will come to a stage of conviction that actually these objects cannot give happiness. The objects of this world are actually designed in a particular manner that it will only frustrate a person. One will understand actually there is no happiness in this world. Otherwise, even if there is happiness, there may be some kind of happiness, but it cannot give me happiness in the way I want. Or, even if I get happiness the way I want, it cannot be everlasting. It may satisfy me for a short while, but it cannot be everlasting. Actually, this is an experience of everyone. Everyone has to learn his own lesson from this world, by living in this world. Wisdom comes from the Shastra, by hearing them, understanding them, and applying them. One can know for sure that actually there is no charm, there is no fun in chasing after the objects of this world, which will only lead one to frustration. But if one doesn't believe in it, then one has to experience it oneself. So, here he is asking, what does the Sita Prajna do? Is a Sita Prajna, how does he behave when others show him anger or others show him equanimity or affection? How is his intelligence disposed towards them? How does he behave? And Krishna in return says that actually Sita Prajna is one who has no material affection and is completely detached from happiness and misery. Like he says, dukkeshu anudignamana sukeshu vikataspraha vitaraga bhayakrodha sitadirmuni ruchyate. Dukkeshu anudignamana. He doesn't become agitated in the time of distress. Sukeshu vikataspraha. Even in the happiness, he is not rejoicing that happiness. Sukesh Bhagataspra, he is still detached. Just like Sudama, how he was detached even after acquiring so much material facilities for enjoying. When he returned back to his home, there was no sign of feeling of jolly, feeling of happiness because he has acquired so much wealth. Actually, he and his wife, when they looked at one another, there were tears in their eyes. Not that at last we have acquired all the material facilities we wanted. Thank you to God. No. The tears in their eyes was not owing to getting that material enjoyment. The tears were of pure devotion. Thinking how the Lord actually is always eager to serve his devotees. It didn't make any difference for them, for Sudama and his wife. They were only admiring the greatness of the Lord. So that is Vigata Spraha. And Dukkeshu Anudignamana. And he is unagitated even in the time of distress. Because the devotee always thinks that I deserve this and much more. Or a devotee may feel that I am only getting a token of what I am supposed to suffer for all my sinful activities. In fact, going one step further, a devotee sees even the dukkha as something that is sent by Krishna, something that is arranged by Krishna, orchestrated by Krishna. So he sees like that. So he never feels the suffering, dukkha also. That is why, yes, sarvatra anabhisnehas tatat prapya shubhashubham. He doesn't consider any situation to be auspicious or inauspicious. He sees them alike. So Krishna gradually takes these steps further and further ahead, telling different symptoms. How is he situated? Now we were talking, how does he respond? Like when Jadabharata was about to be killed, caught and killed by those Kali Upasakas, he did not even protest. He just tolerated, because this is the platform of a very advanced soul, that he has no fear. So three things Krishna says: Vita Raga Bhaya Krodha Sutridhimunirichite. Three things he says: Raga Bhaya Krodha. Material consciousness means we exhibit these three qualities: attachment, fear, and anger. When we identify with the body, then these three things come. In the material realm, in Ayurveda, there are three doshas: kapha, vata, and pitta. Kapha, pitta, vata. There are even characteristics that are said for people in different doshas. Those who are having kapha dosh, they have a very plumpy body, very healthy looking body. So they tend to become very jolly. And the problem with them is they become very attached. Very attached to material things. And pitta dosh, they will flare up in a moment. With the least provocation, they will become wild, angry. So this is pitta dosh, angry. Similarly, vata dosh, people are very thin and they tend to be very insecure and very fearful. So these three doshas we can easily see. That's why Krishna says attachment, fear, and anger. These three things. So we generally identify with the body. And naturally, if I am in a particular dosha, I identify with that body and I keep exhibiting those qualities. Attachment, fear, and anger. But one who is sitapragna, in whatever type of body he is situated in, he becomes aloof from the body. He is totally aloof from the body and the situations in which the body is put. Material consciousness means to act according to the dictation of the mind and senses. Wherever we are put in, we simply act according to the Trivida doshas, which make us act like that. Whereas this Siddhaprajna actually is aloof from those situations. That's why he says Vita, he says. Vita, Raga, Bhaya, Krodha. That is his platform. So in this way, how does he respond or how does he speak? Krishna explains this with respect to the material sense objects. And how is he situated? That is very important. Because here it is said, Bharata, how he was situated. He was completely free from material desires. He was not having even the least desire for material enjoyment. Similarly, Krishna explains that one withdraws one's senses like a tortoise when there is an opportunity for enjoyment. One does not enjoy. One knows that this is not meant for my enjoyment. One just withdraws oneself like a kurmongani vasarvashaya. Now, one may ask, if one is withdrawing one's mind and senses inward, then there's a likelihood that he may be finding great difficulty. There may be a kind of stress or strain created because one is trying to restrain one's mind and senses. But Krishna says, no, Arjuna, he doesn't have to face any struggle. Why? Because he experiences a higher taste. Param drishtva anivartate. Because of that, he can very easily withdraw himself inside. Although the rasavarjam rasapyasya, there may be a desire for enjoying the lower things, but his higher taste replaces the lower taste. So he very easily conquers, he says. Actually, he uses the word drishtva, param drishtva. Sometimes while talking to people, we ask, can you see what I say? Do you see what I am saying? What it means is, one is experiencing a higher taste. And that higher taste makes one feel or makes one experience that the lower things cannot give enjoyment. One can clearly see that. This detachment is such that even in the situation of availability of sense objects for enjoyment, one will not enjoy. Because one can clearly see that actually there is no enjoyment. So, param drishtva anivartate. So, this is the way he is situated. But then Krishna says that even a man of fixed intelligence can become bewildered. Purushasya vipaschitaha. Even a vipaschit, a very intelligent person can become bewildered. So, this stage of siddhapadanga comes after a very long time. Otherwise, in the earlier stages, even after becoming very advanced, still a person can become agitated. Like Krishna talks about dhyayato vishyantumsa, contemplation on the sense objects. So, that means before one withdraws the senses and engages them in Krishna service, even before reaching that stage, there is a stage where one still has some false hopes in the material sense objects. One thinks that maybe there is some enjoyment out there in the sense objects. Actually, the whole sadhana in the early stage, before coming to devotional service, if you see the Jnana Marga and Yoga Marga, these are all focusing on this area, where one is struggling to develop the faith that there is no happiness in the material world. One is trying to artificially restrain the senses and keep it in a calm stage, in a silent stage. It's like somewhat like a Ayurvedic doctor prescribing a patya, or like he gives you some things you should avoid, like you should not eat this, you should not eat that. So we have not actually lost the taste for enjoying them, nor do we have a desire to give them up. We want to continue indulging in them. So this is the stage when one is still contemplating on the objects. That's why Krishna also says elsewhere in another place in Bhagavad Gita, karmendriyani samyamya yaste manasasmaran. So externally one may restrain the sense of karmendriyas, but then in the mind one continues to contemplate on them. So Krishna calls him as a fool. Indriyartan vimudhatma mityachara sauchate. He calls him a fool. Because in the mind he is contemplating, that is actually as good as indulging in the senses. You know the story of the two mendicants who were walking. You know, one of them carried an old woman and helped her cross the river. After some 10 miles or so, the other man asked him, why did you carry her on your shoulders? That old woman, you are a mendicant, how could you do that? So the other man told him, why are you carrying that woman for 10 miles? He asked him, I left her in the bank of the river long ago and you are still carrying her even after 10 miles. So this is the contemplation in the mind, which is actually the nature of the mind. It repeatedly keeps contemplating. And so that's the reason the Lord says how gradually one falls down into the material pool. Vishnu Chakravarti has given an explanation. He says, krodhat bhavati sammohat, sammohat smriti vibramaha. He says smriti vibrama means one forgets the smritis. Even after knowing the verses, that doesn't come to help sometimes. Like you see in the case of Ajamila, he was even reciting the shlokas, remembering the shlokas. Still he fell prey to sense gratification. In this way one can fall down. But then by regular practice of Krishna consciousness, when one comes to a stage of a sita prajna, as Krishna says, apuryamanam achala pratishtam, indefeatable, a person becomes indefeatable, like an ocean in which many, many rivers are going in and coming out, but the ocean remains unagitated. That is actually the ultimate platform. Everyone has to come to that stage where one can fix one's mind only in the Lord's service and be convinced that the real happiness lies only there. In fact, Jiva Goswami explains three types of self-realized souls, even after self-realization. He says one is a person who is like just self-realized. He has some amount of goodness, tinge, in his behavior. Like the Narada boy, the small boy Narada, He has a tinge of attraction for the mode of goodness. That is why when he goes to the forest for perform meditation, he feels some kind of happiness in that mode of goodness, atmosphere. Then he says there is another person higher who has completely become free from the three modes, but has not yet attained his Swarupa. That is the example of a Shukadeva Goswami. But a third person has gone beyond the three modes and has also attained his Swarupa, like the Narada, in his pure stage. So, before one attains that stage of Muktir Hitva Anyata Arupam Swarupena Vyavastiti, before one becomes firmly situated in one's Swarupa, till then one can become agitated in the mind even after attaining a very high stage. Like we find in the example of Priyavrat. Priyavrat had a little bit of lust. And you can see Agnidara, how the Agnidara becomes lusty. Yeah. Agnidara's lust, you can see that. Similarly, you can see Jadabharata. Jadabharata actually is quoted as an example of one who is totally renounced and pure. But in that exalted stage also there is a possibility of a slight impurity. The Jayabharata actually, when he was insulted by Rahaguna, of course he did not respond. He didn't speak. He didn't become angry. He didn't exhibit any anger. But it is explained that how he felt, how this created a slight agitation in his mind. There is a verse which explains that. I can see that. But for self-realized souls, this kind of slight disturbance of lust, anger, or attachment, these things, that does not disturb the devotional service. That doesn't put any obstacle in the devotional service. The devotional service goes on in that exalted stage. But the purpose of saying this is to understand that even in a very elevated stage, there may be a trace of impurity that may surface. Even in that stage, the material desires may come up. In the Mahabharata, there is a story of a sage called Alarka. This Alarka sage, while performing meditation penances, one day he was sitting under a tree and was contemplating in his mind that right now I am feeling agitation of the mind. My mind is not peaceful. It's very disturbed. Why? Why should I become disturbed? What is there in this world to be acquired? After all, the soul is different from the body. And none of these material things can give us enjoyment. Then why should my senses contemplate again and again on the sense objects? Why I cannot refrain from them totally? So when he was contemplating like this, deeply in his mind, he wanted to find out what is the cause of this kind of pollution in his consciousness. So he said, I think it is because of the eyes with which I see the objects of the senses, which actually cause the contamination. So he took an arrow and he said, let me pierce my eyes so I don't have to suffer this anymore, this trishna or the hankering anymore. So when he was about to pierce his eyes, the eyes told him, oh great sage, don't be foolish. By piercing the eyes, you will only be damaging the vital parts of your body. But you are not going to become free from the contamination. Then he again sat and thought for some more time. Then he thought, maybe through the ears I have heard so much information about the sense objects. That is causing me the pain. Let me pierce the ears. Took the arrow. When he was about to pierce the ears said the same thing. You will only be damaging the vital parts of your body. Don't do that. Simply by cutting off your ears or piercing your ears, you cannot become free from this contamination. So in this way, all the different senses of this body told him. And he didn't know how to overcome them. Then he thought the mind is the source of all evil. He wanted to pierce the mind. But he didn't know how. Then he thought the intelligence is above the mind. Maybe the intelligence is the source of all evil. So at one time he sat and meditated very deeply and performed severe penances. And then he came to the conclusion. He understood that the source of all trouble is the uncontrolled mind. And the uncontrolled mind has an influence on even intelligence also. It can pollute the intelligence also. And it can misdirect the senses. So the mind has to be controlled. So how to control the mind? Then he understood that the mind has to be, instead of allowing the mind and the senses to wander and keep grazing over the objects of this world, the senses in the mind have to be withdrawn inward and focus on that Supreme Lord from whom everything has emanated, who is the source of everything. Yataha pravrittir bhutana. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita also, yataha pravrittir bhutana yena sarva midam tatam. So, there, in that verse, Krishna says, Svakarmanatam abhyarcha siddhim vindati manava. One should engage all one's activities in serving that Lord who is the source of everything. Similarly, the sage Alarka came to the same conclusion that we have to withdraw our mind and senses and focus it on that Supreme Lord who is the source of everything. And when we do that, then by, in the Ashtanga Yoga path, they practice pratyahara, they practice dharana, dispassion, discrimination, and by all these different procedures. But these procedures are useless if one does not focus on the Supreme Lord, as Prabhupada explains in that sixth chapter. So, we can see that the senses which we have, these are only instruments, external instruments. One may try to close the external instruments, which may help a little bit, but then there is a subconscious mind which has got so many previous experiences of enjoying so many material objects in this world. So, inwardly one may keep contemplating. That is why they try to do this Dhamma and Shama also. Dhamma means externally controlling the instruments. Shama is to avoid thinking and contemplating on the sense objects. And this kind of restraint is practically impossible without focusing on devotion service. Here it is said, Bharata, he worshipped Lord Vasudev with fruits and flowers and the things, items from the forest. Such a simple worship. But although this worship is simple in nature, it has the power to help a person totally become free from material desires. There's a famous verse in Srimad Bhagavatam. This verse says the same information, similar thing. It says, Yat pada pankaja palasha vilasa bhaktya karma shayam gratitamod gratayanti santaha tadvanna riktamatayo yatayo piruddha sroto ganastamaranam bhaja vasudevam. And one worships Lord Vasudeva. Then it says, sroto gana means like the waves. The waves of desire for sense gratification which come and attack us and knock us off such desires, he says, can be overcome. How? By serving Lord Vasudeva. If one takes the tulasi and with sandalwood pulp, if one applies that in the lotus feet of the Lord and offers flowers, fruits and bhoga for the Lord and bows down to him and meditates on his beautiful personality and his form and his qualities and his nature and activities and his love for his devotees, then one can very easily submerge the seeds of material desires, as Rupa Goswami explains. Rupa Goswami explains, and the desires in our heart, the kama karma bij, they are all like seeds. But when there is an overflooding of water, then the seeds, all of them can be submerged under the water and they become rotten. And they cannot act anymore. They cannot germinate. We generally don't use the other example of burning away the seeds. That is used generally for the jnana marg. Basmasat, kurute arjuna. So, jnanis may try to burn, but still the propensity to engage in sin remains. But when the bhaktas, they delve deep in the ocean of bhakti, then it can completely submerge all the seeds and it can make them not germinate. As in the 11th canto, it's explained. Nakama karma bijanam yasya chetasi sambhavaha vasudevaika nilayaha savai bhagavatottamaha. na kama karma bijanam. He says kama karma bij cannot act yasya chetasi sambhavah. They cannot act in the heart of a devotee. Why? Vasudeva ikanilayaha. Because they are fixed in Lord Vasudeva. This is actually for the platform of a pure devotee, Bhagavata Uttamaha. In this way, there is no alternative than to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and acquire devotion to Him. And many, many great personalities have achieved that state. And those things are described in the pages of Bhagavatam. And if one develops such attraction for Lord Vasudev, then even a small child like Dhruva or Prahalad can develop devotion to the Lord and can surpass this most dangerous material world where one can very easily slip and fall down. This world of senses and sense objects. In this way, the material desire is a cause of all the pain and sufferings in this world. And this can be the path of conquering the material desires is a very long path. And a path where sadhaka can get tired. But the path of bhakti is, it's not only kleshada, it is shubhada. It is, when it develops up to the stage of shandarandana visheshatma. So, the path of bhakti gives so much joy. The happiness felt by Brahmananda is actually one drop of the oceanic happiness that is experienced by a bhakta, by a devotee. That is why the happiness in bhakti is called as the shoreless, bottomless ocean. So when one engages in the Lord's service, on one hand it is very relishable, susukam kartam avyayam, on the other hand, very easily it helps one to surpass the material desires. Thank you very much. Krantraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki. Thank you very much.